No biting, Daniel Cormier. The first time I saw the Ultimate Fighting Championship on a VHS tape in 1993, there was three rules. Don't pull the hair, don't poke him in the eyes, and don't bite him. And I remember thinking, do you really need to say no biting? Nobody's going to bite. Everybody knows you can't bite. Daniel, we're never going to see a bite, are we?
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's the bad guy, Chael Sonnen. Chael, there is no crying in baseball, and there's no biting in fighting. Chael, we got somebody biting another man inside the octagon last weekend. I could not believe it. A bite. Chael, it's very hard to experience first. In the UFC today, we experienced the first last weekend as Lima got bit in the octagon. What you make of it?
Daniel, I first heard about this. I heard about it before I saw it. I was at the NCAA tournament with you when this was going on. When I go and research it and look it up, I see these bite marks right on the arm. And I remember thinking, first off, did you think that was going to help you in a fight? Was that part of his body attacking you at the time? How did you even get the teeth marks? Because if you zoom in, you can see uppers and lower teeth really well. Like, did you spit the mouthpiece out? I remember the only time I've ever seen somebody bite in combat. It was Mike Tyson when he did it to Evander Holyfield. But it took Mike some work just to get the mouthpiece spit out. They zoom in on his mouth and he's trying to get that mouthpiece out without anybody grabbing it. He spits it on the ground. We knew something. As the audience, we knew something was coming. But this was not telegraphed. Lima had no way to know. What did he bite him for?
Oh. I don't understand how you get yourself, Chael, into such a position that you're biting someone. Also, those mouth guards are so tight to your teeth, it's impossible to take it out without kind of tugging at it. Chael, my mouth guards were so tight that I would have to stick my fingers into the top of it to pull it off of my teeth. How in the world did this young man get this mouthpiece out in order to bite him? Look, I was talking to someone a while back, and they said, Daniel, it was Joe Rogan, right? So I'm talking to Rogan on his show, and we're talking about Mike Tyson biting Evander Holyfield, but then Mike Tyson also bit Lennox Lewis at a press conference. So Mike was kind of known for biting dudes. And I said, it's not that far-fetched, Joe, because when me and Jones flew off the stage, I thought about biting him, Chael. Because when you're an alpha male and you find yourself in an uncomfortable, unfamiliar position, you start to think, how do I get out of this? Your immediate reaction is to go to biting. This dude, Igor, actually decided to do it inside the octagon. It's unheard of. I've never seen it before. It's some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen happen inside of a fight. And look, Lima rightfully got a bonus. But Chael, this young man said, I am going to make sure that I have this forever. So Dana goes, I'm giving this dude $25,000 as a bonus because he got bit inside my octagon. Dude goes and tattoos the bite mark on his body. Dana goes, I'm giving this dude $50,000 because he tattooed it on his arm. Bro, this is one of those moments that when this man's a grandfather, he will lift his arm up and show it to the grandkids and go, wait until I tell you this story.
Yeah, and Daniel, you and I probably know more about and have probably seen more biting incidents than anybody from the sport of wrestling. I mean, I just have to tell you, when you see the upper and the lower teeth, it's actually very uncommon. I've seen people get bit in wrestling, but a lot of times it's just the top teeth. Maybe the guy's putting on a technique known as a crossface. He brings his arm to you. He starts grinding it in. Either way, if marks are left on the body and the opponent can show those marks to a referee, you will be disqualified. And that doesn't matter if you're at the NCAA level, the Olympic level, or it's your first event and you're 8 or 9 years old. And I'm only sharing that because this does look pretty aggressive. I mean, when I saw the upper and lower, I am still trying to figure out what was Igor trying to achieve. Was he just angry and he just wanted to hurt this person? Was this premeditated? Was this an accident? There are times in wrestling, partner, where we will see teeth marks, but they were on accident, meaning the opponent put their own hand around the mouth, maybe trying to do a technique we call a crossface, and then the teeth got exposed and went in. But that's not when you see the upper and the lower. The upper and the lower is supposed to demonstrate a clamping down of the mouth, which is intentional. Look, Dana White banned Igor for life. Now, you want to become a fan of Lima real fast?
Yeah.
Lima came out with those bite marks, the tattoo, and the bonus and said, please don't fire him. This is very bad what he did, but I want him to keep his job. I just want to add that because that was a pretty cool move by Lima.
Yeah, it was a cool move by Lima, but it was no saving him after that, right? There are just certain things you can't do. Like, and sadly, this kid made a decision that ultimately is going to cost him. Now, when they say banned for life, Chael, we both know, as in professional wrestling, loser goes home match, sometimes the rules can change in the UFC. So you don't know if Igor will get another opportunity, but he made a horrible mistake last weekend. So essentially, he's one and done, right? He made his UFC debut, he bit somebody, and his UFC career was over. But it's a funny story. It's a funny story because it's something that we don't see happen inside the octagon. But what we have seen time and time again inside the octagon is Rose Namajunas. We have seen Rose Namajunas, Chael, in very tough spots where she essentially needed a win. She did that this weekend. She took on Amanda Ribas in a situation back down at 115 pounds against one of the tougher guy women in the division, and she needed a win in order to stay viable in a weight class that she is known as one of the greatest of all time in. How impressed were you by Rose Namajunas? Now, guys, as a disclaimer for Chael and I, we were both at the NCAA tournament. We had to go back and watch this fight. It wasn't live, but going back and watching it, Chael, knowing the result, what did you think of the performance? Because I got to be honest, it's harder for me to go back and watch something when I know what happened already. So I watched it, and I was impressed. But, you know, I don't generally like watching fights like that, man. I want to watch it while it's happening, or I just don't want to kind of watch it.
Daniel, I will tell you, perception is reality. And I know you know that adage, but I've never seen anything in life where that is more apparent and obvious than in this sport. And the perception of Rose is that her best days behind her. The perception of Rose is that she was never that good and never that scary in the first place. That she went along and she was cute and she had some fun and she had some expressions. And it's even a bit of a romantic love story with her and her trainer, Pat Barry. But the fact that she is a stone cold killer inside of that ring, and the fact that she is one of the top female fighters, not just competed today, but to have ever done it, you kind of have to understand the timeline. And the only reason I bring that to you is, yes, I was impressed with Rose, but I was also surprised. And then I got to put myself in check, partner, and I got to say, why would I be surprised? Wei Li is going to be the co-main event of the biggest mixed martial arts event to ever take place, and I'm talking about UFC 300. Wei Li has two losses. Oh, by the way, both of them are to Rose. One of them was by finish. Rose is only 31 years old. It just always seems to feel, I'm talking about that perception, it feels like Rose has been here and done that, but she passed the torch. At 31 years young, and now she's still a main event on the worldwide leader, she can still be part of the five-round club, she can still get her hand raised. DC, Rose is awesome, but she is one of those athletes, unfortunately, that has to remind us of that very often. I got reminded again Saturday, welcome back to the weight class that she was once the queen. Welcome back, Rose. Mm.
Yeah, well, you know, welcome back, Rose, to the winning circle. I think I was wrong, Chael. I think that was at 125. I just saw the graphic. It said first win at 125. So, again, guys, we were a bit distracted. We were at the NCAA wrestling tournament watching them fight. Amanda Ribas was also a 115-pounder. So, you had two 115-pounders fighting at 125. But, Chael, she got it done. And like you said, when you are as special as Rose Namajunas, winning the world championship after losing the world championship on the Ultimate Fighter finale when they went through the show to Carla Esparza, coming back and beating Zhang Weili the way that she did, coming back and beating Zhang Weili again in the way that she did, going up to 125, losing fights, and then not looking great in the last fight, even though you said she was very encouraged by the performance, you didn't know what was left. And a part of that is because she's been around so long. Even though she's only 31, we've seen Rose Namajunas since a baby on The Ultimate Fighter. So it's easy to talk and think, well, the age may not match the miles because of some of the fights that she's been in. But she looked really good last weekend. And last week, Chael, we did our headline hunch. I said, is Rose Namajunas going to be back after next week? It seems like she's back. And not only is she back, Chael, she said and has her eyes set on someone very, very hot right now in this division. And she called out Macy Barber, which was kind of surprising to me. Take a listen.
I don't know. I guess I'm going to be watching that Manon and Aaron Blanchfield fight. I wanted to fight either one of those for this fight, but, you know, I lost against Manon. So if I could get a rematch, if she wins, or either her, or even I know Macy looked really incredible as well. So maybe one of those girls.
Okay, Chael. Okay, Chael. We were a little hard on the guy a couple weeks ago. Rose did not seem as sure as we wanted to seem, Chael. I know you like her. What did you make of the call out?
I got to give her a B overall. And you're right, Daniel. I would like her to be a little bit more aggressive, but sometimes the rules do change when you're dealing with a former champion. And it does seem like Rose really does have to reinsert herself. Let me just give you a great example. But when we were in Miami, we're out there watching, you know, and Dustin's going with St. Denis and Sugar Sean and Cheeto are squaring it up, just a time frame for the audience. But they announced that Joanna Champion is going into the Hall of Fame. That is the biggest honor that our sport has. That is higher than main event. That is higher than world champion. That is number one honor. Oh, by the way, Joanna Champion lost two fights, and they're both to Rose. And the only example that I'm giving you there is she's been there and done that. Like, this is still her field, and this is still her world. And it is a little bit different when you perhaps are a future Hall of Famer yourself, when you perhaps could be fighting for titles right now, but you got to do something in between because those opportunities are booked up. So I think that Rose coming out a little bit hesitant. I know that isn't generally what you and I like, but I'm giving her some grace because she's in a unique situation at 31 years old, covering the spread at two different weight classes. I mean, not for nothing. It is a little bit difficult to, one, understand that the promotion and the world title opportunities are going to be a little harder for me to get to because I've already been given those chances. At the same time, I don't want to slide too far down the card. I think Rose is in a tough spot, and I think she made the most of the situation.
So, Chael, I'll give her a C. I'm not as gracious as you. One, because she said the name of the person she lost to in the previous fight. You gotta wait a little bit before you go back to the same person, right? You gotta go back to the same person after a while, or at least find out what happens between Manon and Blanchfield. Because if Blanchfield wins, there's no reason for Rose to look back at Manon Fiore because she's won her last fight. With her name, value, and recognition, she almost jumps her after winning a fight over Amanda Ribas. So that's where my issue was. Secondly, just the uncertainty. She felt like, to me, that young girl when we first saw, where she was almost like inside of herself because she was just kind of like shy. But this is Rose Namajunas. You're the former world champion. You are one of the greatest fighters in the world. You be up there and you become assertive. And I think that is my only knock when I'm grading her on that call out. But I mean, I don't hate it. I thought she fought well. She makes herself relevant. You know, some of these great fighters, they're always one fight away, Chael, from being right back in the mix. And I think Rose Namajunas' win last weekend did exactly that for her.
And Daniel, Rose is going to break into the top 10. Now, those rankings don't come out until tomorrow morning about 9 a.m. But as I take a look at the top five here, even if I take a look at the champion, I think that Rose's name, whether it's on the hit list or it's for a contendership list, she belongs in there somewhere. What do you think?
Yeah, she belongs in the top 10 of this weight class. And now she is showing that she can compete with some of the best fighters at flyweight after getting that massive win last weekend. Chael. We have been doing this every week. Now, we're on our road to UFC 300. So we look back at UFC 1. Last week, this week, we take a look back at UFC 100.
I'm as hungry as ever. I want to beat Dan Henderson.
I want to be known as the best mixed martial arts fighter in the world, pound for pound of all time.
I am the UFC heavyweight champion. Enough said.
Chael, I remember watching this and being at this guy named Taylor Day was a kid that wrestled for me in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and I was sitting in their house and we watched UFC 100. I was a massive fan and we would always get together to watch these fights. And one was because of Brock Lesnar. But the sport had started to really fly for us as fans. And I remember watching Dan Henderson knock out Michael Bisping and thinking to myself, wow, that last punch was very unnecessary, one, because I didn't have the mind of the fighter yet. Then I remember thinking, wow, this George St. Pierre must be really good, because all we had ever heard of Thiago Alves was that he was spectacular, and George just shut him completely down. And then watching Brock Lesnar, Chael, you remember he said, I'm going to take this horseshoe, Frank, and stick it expletive. He said he was going to go and take Sable home and do something to her. He insulted one of the UFC sponsors in terms of the alcoholic beverage at the time. It was the first time that the sport to me felt massive. It felt bigger than just something that wasn't accepted by most. Because you remember in the beginning, Chael, not everybody accepted cage fighting. But it felt like something bigger than cage fighting that night when I watched UFC 100. And it's been just getting bigger and bigger ever since. But UFC 100 really did cement for me what mixed martial arts could be down the line.
You called her Sable. Only our smart marks in the comment section are going to know what that's about. But I popped for it. Now, I got to tell you, those were heroes. Those three people that popped on the screen, man, those were the guys that I would dream to be like. And I would question myself after 100. Am I good enough? Can I ever catch these guys? Will I ever be like those big three? And then even seeing George St. Pierre, the biggest draw in the sport. He had every record before Conor McGregor came along. And I mean, I've got to tell you, it was really interesting because he was in a co-main event spot. That is how much pressure gets put on the heavyweight division, but almost how much of a spectacle Brock Lesnar could make things. I mean, Brock really was a once-in-a-lifetime attraction. Take it on Frank Mir, right? I don't want to spend all my time on Brock because that was a two-man party. It was a comeback fight for Brock. That's how good and respected Frank was. But those are some really wonderful evenings. I mean, 100 does make, and by the way, there was one piece of 100 that is still out there. Dana White was joking around, but Dana White said at a press conference, if this thing does 1.4 million, I will jump off the roof of the Mandalay Bay. Now, of course, nobody's expecting him to jump off the roof, but we do understand the principle there. It ended up doing 1.7. Dana said, man, I can't go to the roof, but I am a man of my word. I'm going to pay you guys back in another way. Just stand by. I'm just reminding you that's the only piece of 100 that we haven't completely wrapped up yet.
Chael, yeah, Dana needs to skydive. We need to get him to skydive to pay back that UFC 100. Hey, you want to know an interesting fact? Remember, John Jones fought Stephen Bonner on the undercard of UFC 100 and was like belly to back suplexing him and doing all kind of crazy stuff, spinning elbows. And you were watching going, this Jones kid has potential to be something really, really special. And then you realize after watching that and then becoming a part of the sport, you knew that the centennial cards would always be massive. So at UFC 100, you saw them really load the deck. But for me, my everlasting memory was getting done with the fight card, Brock having one of the best promos of all time, and I walked away thinking to myself, I'd love to be a part of that show. And I still had some time left in wrestling. But I said, you know, I'd love to be a part of this at some point in my life because it just was bigger than what I remembered. Because for as special as The Ultimate Fighter was, where everybody started to kind of tap into it, that night showed me that it was so much bigger and it was going to continue to get bigger and bigger. And when you talk about once-in-a-lifetime spectacle, Chael, when talking to Brock Lesnar, it was the same thing in the WWE because Brock Lesnar was real. Every time you saw him, it wasn't like you had to really squint or put on goggles to pretend that you were looking at a guy that was real, that really could rip you apart with his hands if he needed to. And that's what made him so special over there, and that's what made him so special in the octagon.
Yeah, there's no question. He really is a once-in-a-lifetime attraction. And don't forget what he had on his shoulders. I mean, Daniel, I was a competitive fighter. I had over 20 fights at that point, and I got chills trying to do the imaginary, put myself in their shoes. What would it be like to walk out in front of that many people, in front of a 1.7 million right-on-pay-per-view audience, closing the night out after George St. Pierre, after Dan Henderson, after John Jones? Not for nothing. Brock didn't quite have the experience to do this. He'd only had three or four opportunities to make that walk and compete. He'd already lost to Frank Mir, and it wasn't overly competitive the first time. That was only about 16, 17 months prior to this. I mean, if you think of everything that really was on Lesnar's shoulders that night, and for him to shake it off, go out, have that kind of victory, but then have the sense to spin things forward and cut that kind of a horseshoe, sable, beer-drinking promo, it was quite an iconic moment. And for that, if nothing else, I personally would put Brock into the Hall of Fame.
You know, John Jones fought Jake O'Brien. I know you guys hate whenever your memory doesn't work right on point, but he beat Stephen Bonner at UFC 94. So I should get some points for correcting myself there. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Chael, that was a historic night. But today, in MMA history, a champion was crowned. Do you remember Francis Ngannou versus Stipe Miocic 2 for the heavyweight championship of the world?
Of course.
The first time they fought.
You're talking about the apex.
Yes. The first time they fought was in Boston. And everybody was expecting Francis to be able to dominate Stipe in the way that he had. Stipe said, nope, not today. I'm the champ. We will fight, and we will dance my dance. But that second fight, Chael, Francis seemed different. Francis was switching stances. He was much more calm. He ultimately knocked Stipe out to become the heavyweight champion of the world. And still, Chael, That's the last time Miocic fought.
By the way, a moment ago, you corrected yourself on a Jake O'Brien, Stefan Bonner mix-up, and I believe you said you should get credit for that. So just to get it clear, so you said it wrong, had about a minute to remember it, and you wanted the pat on the back for getting right the wrongness that you had.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, I got to tell you, that was very smooth how you kind of slipped that in there. Oh, and by the way, yes, I do remember that second fight. I hit Stipe. I hit Stipe because he had dominated the first fight, and there wasn't enough time in between. I mean, Stipe going out for 25 minutes, and now I'm talking about the first fight with Francis, but he beat him the same way. It was rinse and repeat, take him down and keep him there. Did it all five rounds. There wasn't enough time for Francis to gain enough steam, not to mention when Francis was going out there fighting, he was having one round knockouts. Stipe's getting the experience of being in there with you, and I'm just figuring Stipe's got to be better. And you know what happened? Stipe got on the scale at 231 pounds for the second fight. He was 248 for perspective the first time he fought Francis. He took off 17 pounds of muscle. I've never understood why. I called Stipe. I spoke to his wife. I just said, what is going on here? Is he on a vegan diet? Is he on the paleo diet? Is there anything specifically that we can point to as to why his body is deteriorating? She was insulted. I used the word deteriorated. She said, he only eats food that I cook for him. I'm cooking just the same. He's just training that much harder now. He got on top and to stay there, he's training so hard. It was a matter of calories in versus calories out. I take the time to tell you that because this is where we left off with Stipe and Francis. We never went to the trilogy. A true trilogy where you split the first two and you go into the third fight. We never saw that, but Stipe did take the time to put that mask back on. He's going to use that mask against John Jones, and for the first time in John's career, John is going to be a meaningfully lighter man when they get on the scale. That is one part of this I hope you don't miss.
No, we don't miss it, Jalen. You know, 3 years ago this fight happened. Stipe is now going to fight for the heavyweight championship in the world. And Francis defended the takedown the first time, and you thought, oh my goodness, if Stipe can't take him down, he's going to find himself in a lot of trouble, especially being that small. Because if you remember, after he beat him in Boston, Stipe and I fought three times. So I was faster. So he needed to get a little lighter to try to keep up with the speed. But then he wasn't able to put the weight back on to fight Francis, and it ultimately cost him. I'm very interested to see what Stipe looks like the next time we get him inside the octagon, because it's been a really, really long time. But that was a great night for Ngannou whenever all the expectation finally became reality and he became the heavyweight champion of the world. Chael, last weekend you and I spent a weekend in Kansas City, Missouri. It was, for me, one of the best weekends that I've had in a really long time. It was fun. It was exciting. We got to watch wrestling at the highest level in the university, meaning I'm not talking about the world level, but I'm talking in the United States. That's the highest level of wrestling overall in terms of a big tournament. What did you make of the NCAA tournament, Chael? How much did you enjoy your experience this second time?
It's mixed reviews for me on a personal standpoint. I mean, when I go to that event, which is the absolute mecca of events, I mean, they'll bring twice the amount of people to watch the NCAA championship match than they will to watch the Olympic gold medal match, just in terms of fanfare and anticipation. But Daniel, I got my own personal memories of that tournament. So when I see that thing, man, sometimes it's an open wound. And I know a lot of people, I think you could probably relate to the other side too. You go in there and you try to enjoy it, but that youth and that time when I was the one pulling up the singlets and putting the headgear on, to me, that was yesterday. I remember the smells of that building. I remember what I had for breakfast those days, what I was thinking and what I was feeling. So it's a very mixed review, but I got a young man. It's my son, Thero, and I wanted to take him and just see if he has that spark. I wanted him to see what he could become. I wanted to see the work and the effort and the dedication that it takes to get to that point. And when I did have a chance to watch the NCAA, this might surprise you, but one of my bigger takeaways did not lie within the athletes. I was so impressed with the head coach of Penn State University, Cale Sanderson. And the reason I was impressed is to find the hunger that it takes to be number one. To find that hunger, partner, is such a hard thing to do, but when you achieve the level of success that Cale has achieved as an athlete, the only undefeated four-time NCAA champion, he's the only wrestler in the history of the world to be caught on the cover of the Wheaties box, he moves right into coaching, and now he is record-setting. He set a record with team points in this event. He was already the defending defending champions. He's won so many of these, I've lost track. I believe it's 11 of the last 13 years. Even if that's not right, I really don't care. Yep. Because there's not enough fingers to put rings on. And yet he still came out, even as defending champion, and all of that wonderful success, Olympic gold medal himself. But it's a very different role to be a coach. To be an athlete, you are selfish and you think of yourself. To be a coach, you must be selfless. And to watch him be able to give back. And Daniel, he won't even steal airtime. He won't even do interviews if it means taking time away from his athletes. The shine is completely on them. I don't know where he continues to find the drive, but he deserves credit. That is an honorable man, Cale Sanderson.
Absolutely. And Cale, you know what I love the most watching Cale and his athletes? His reactions to them are always the same. You saw him give Greg Kirkfleet a big hug when he came off the mat. Mitchell Messenbrink lost a match and didn't realize that riding time was going to determine the outcome. He walked to the side. Cale gave, when he was like, I didn't know. He was confused. Cale goes, "It's okay. Good job." Gave him a hug. Patted him on the back, no big deal. That is hard to do as a coach because you know that Cale Sanderson has never made that type of mistake. But watching his athlete go through that, he needs to be the one to encourage him because for as disappointed as Cale is, for as disappointed as Casey is, and for as disappointed as his father is, it doesn't hurt more to anyone more than it does to Mitchell Messenbrink. So you got to take care of the athlete. And I think that is where Cale has really separated himself from most coaches in the NCAA right now. Cale, they won by 100 points. Doesn't happen. They could have split that team in half and they would have still been second. That is so impressive in terms of what this team has done. Cale Sanderson's a winner, man. I was able to spend some time with him on the wrestling mat, competing against him, and then on the Olympic team, competing with him. And I'm telling you, man, there are stories that I could share with you in terms of weight cutting, in terms of training that are just next level. And I can only imagine that that is what he is instilling in his athletes today. I watched Carter Storace win that NCAA tournament with his knees completely tore up. Do that on a massive knee brace, and he got the job done to become a four-time champ. It was impressive by Penn State. And it was just really, for as impressed as we were by it, it has kind of become the norm for Cale Sanderson, who to me is one of the greatest competitors in all of American history, regardless of the sport.
Yeah, there's no question. And Daniel, let me ask you something just in case I missed it on a personal note. Did they name an outstanding wrestler of the NCAA tournament? Who was it?
Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks got the outstanding wrestler.
Okay. And I'm fine with that. I know the way they were building Brooks. I certainly don't take anything away. I just think you got to look at Storace. I really do believe that. I think that sometimes when they do an outstanding wrestler partner, they do an outstanding wrestler in the tournament as opposed to outstanding wrestler of the tournament. The fact that Brooks was undefeated, I think, helped to get him that award. But that would be, again, in the tournament as opposed to of. Storace going through that on one leg, having two NCAA champions on his side of the bracket. He goes into a finals match greatly. Not himself, greatly compromised. He might have only had 2 points, but excuse me, the next best guy in the country had none. The next best guy in the country could not get on the board against an injured Storace. For me, I want to give him a shout out, and I think that's your future UFC and MMA fighter, right? We always look at an event like this to see who's next, who's coming. I think the whole world had better look out for Storace.
Carter Storace and Greg Kirkvliet are both fighters. Are wrestlers that have intentions of being fighters. Before we transition, I want to give a hats off to my man, Neil Arisman. Cale, he's the head coach at Arkansas Little Rock University. 5 years ago, they had no program. 6 years ago, all the people at that university flew to the NCAA tournament to tell them, we're starting wrestling. They went and they got the right guy. 5 years later, Coach Neil Arisman was named the coach of the tournament at the NCAA tournament, and he was named the National Wrestling Coach of the Year because in 5 years, Cale, Coach Neil Arisman has coached two All-Americans, Nasir Bailey and Stephen Little. So hats off to Neil. You're a great guy. You believe his faith, Cale, has allowed for him to find great success in a situation that's very hard, because there are programs that have been around for many, many years that don't have the success of the Arkansas Little Rock Trojans. So hats off to Coach Neal, Nasir Bailey, Stephen Little, and the rest of his staff on a great weekend. Chael. Look, man, I'm struggling with the Kale Chael right now. That's why I'm having to pause every time I go from Kale Sanderson to Chael Sonnen, because you guys are very much confusing with your names. But we always finish with the good, the bad, or it absolutely sucks. So let's get into that.
That's real.
You absolutely suck.
All right, Chael. So, fighters wanting custom shorts is becoming the trend. There's another one that wants custom shorts. Take a listen.
But, you know, one thing I think the UFC can still give me is my floor shorts. And I'm not giving up on that. I believe that we're going to get a floor short sometime, hopefully soon. And we'll see what happens, you know. I mean, if I'm not going to be able to have an event in Hawaii, or even if they do and I'm not going to be able to be a part of it, the least they can do is give the man a floor shorts, right? So, you know, we're seeing people with purple. We're seeing people with pink. Give me my damn floral. I want it. The people want it. UFC likes to give what the people want, so floor shorts. Come on, UFC. Pull the trigger.
All right, Chael. So, fighters wanting custom shorts. Good, bad, or does it absolutely suck?
It's fine. It's fine. It's a whatever. Look, that is not the hill that I am going to die on. I got to tell you, if I've only got so many bullets in the chamber and I build up some goodwill within the company where I'm going to make an ask, for me, it's darn sure not going to be over the shorts. On the other side of it, that is a sponsor, and Venom is putting some money and some hard work out there. And if they want to show that they're listening to an athlete and they think they can sell a whole bunch of shorts, I'm all for it. But I don't really care what the guy wants to wear. Not for nothing. And many people will disagree with me, and they'll say, but clothing is a form of expression. Not for me. Maybe it's because I'm colorblind and maybe I don't have great fashion sense. Either way, clothing is what I wear to defeat the elements and not to walk outside naked. I don't know about this whole expression business. I don't care if it's got flowers, if it's pink, it's yellow. I don't get the whole thing. I have never understood it. It looks like he's got it. If that's the ask that he wants to make, I'd have used it for something else, but more power to him.
I think it's good, Chael. I think it's good. I think it's good that these athletes want to express themselves in the octagon. But in this situation in particular, I say do it. Give Max Holloway whatever it is he wants. For the fights that this man has put on in his UFC career, you comply. You try to make him feel good about where he is, because right now, he's not fighting for championships. Obviously, he's fighting for the BMF title, but he's not in the featherweight picture. He's not in the lightweight picture, but he's headlined. He's fought everybody. He's been entertaining. Give him his shorts. Give him whatever it is he asked for. All right, Chael. So, Kansas City, embarrassment happened. Jesse Mendez splatles Brock Hardy. Chael, is this good? Is this bad? Or does it absolutely suck? I know it sucks for Hardy, but does it absolutely suck?
This is good. This is amazing, as a matter of fact. And you know what? I don't know that you should be embarrassed. You get caught in a splatel, there's not a whole lot of things you could do. I mean, even a coach will tell you, if you go ask your coach, you say, how do I get out of a splatel? He's going to say, by not getting put in it in the first place, which is what a coach will say to stay the alpha male when he has no idea what the answer is. I mean, right, there's some things in wrestling moves where if you get put in them, you're not getting out. You can either get pinned or hope that the clock comes in there and saves you. And I do have to add one thing. Daniel, it was 1985. And this is, technology was very different, right? If you ever had a VCR, you were very fortunate. You were one of the lucky kids. And it turned out that my buddy Justin Wolf had one, and I watched the 1985 finals in Justin's living room. I was an aspiring wrestler. My father had once upon a time wrestled for the state championship, so my father was the wrestling expert in the room. A splatel was hit for the first time ever. We didn't know what it was. So we went to that VHS. We rewound it. We kept watching it, trying to figure it out. My dad was trying to break it down. We moved the coffee table out of a way. We barely got it. I mean, it was like on 8 or 9 or 10 retries because this move looked so complicated. But finally, right there on the floor of my buddy Justin's house, we discovered the splatel. So for me to see one again 30 years later, this is very good.
It's good. It's good because it shows how different wrestling can be and how creative an athlete can be. And when you watch Jesse Mendez all weekend, he was being creative. He was free. He was able to just do things on the wrestling mat that most aren't. Look, man, this clip got picked up by World Star. This young man, Brock Hardy, is getting said to retire if this happens to you. No, it shouldn't. It's not something that you practice defending, like Chael said. And honestly, it's embarrassing. But things like that can happen to anybody. I mean, there are times where you get stuck in a leg cradle. You get stuck in some random positions that you don't want to get in. That never happened. And I believe that's what happened to Hardy in that situation. But no, he shouldn't retire. No, he shouldn't go hide himself and stick his head in the ground. It happens. It's wrestling. But yes, it is absolutely good, Chael.
The kids have a make-believe fight. It's you, partner. Daniel Cormier versus Mike Tyson in the streets. So there's no rules. Is this good? Is this bad? Or does this idea absolutely suck?
This idea absolutely sucks. Because come on, man, this is Mike Tyson. This is Iron Mike Tyson. I don't want to fight Iron Mike. Nobody should want to fight Iron Mike. Now, am I fighting Iron Mike today? Or am I fighting Iron Mike back in the day with all those belts with the gold tooth on his teeth right here? Am I fighting the Iron Mike that had the pigeon coop on the top of the apartment building in New York City? I don't want to fight Iron Mike Tyson. I don't want to fight Iron Mike Tyson anywhere. I love Iron Mike. He's the greatest. And that is what I'm going to say about that. No, I don't want to fight Mike Tyson. It absolutely sucks.
Daniel, and I will tell you, it is very hard for me to watch heavyweight title fights in the UFC right now because I'm always thinking the same thing, which is the greatest fighter in the UFC in the heavyweight division is the one outside in the suit calling the action. I do think that you would have been champion even times after you left. I'm not sure right now is any different that you are the best, but the idea of Mike Tyson, I appreciate what you just said. I appreciate that you said you didn't want to fight him, and not because your skills couldn't overwhelm him, but because he's a bit of an icon. We admire Mike Tyson, and not to mention, partner, we do know if it comes to the streets, it doesn't even matter if it's the ring, he's a little loose on the rules, but in the streets, Iron Mike is for sure gonna bite you.
He's absolutely going to bite you, and it would make for a very, very difficult fight. So Jake Paul, have fun, man. Have fun trying to navigate that situation without something really, really bad happening to you. Chael, every Monday and Thursday, man, you can find this wherever you get your podcast, YouTube, ESPN+, ESPN2, Midnight Eastern. Every single week, we're on two times a week. I'm DC. That's Chael Sonnen. Another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. We're back in your life in a few days.